Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
On a Tuesday morning, it's June 17th. Hope you're having a beautiful day. And thanks for listening to Catholic Connection from EWTN. Very excited, as I always am, about our great guests this morning. And thanks to Richard and Deb for always working so hard on the program and bringing us so many wonderful people. I'm excited to talk with Dan DeMattei because he and I actually spoke together a couple of years ago. I think it was 2 years ago in California, but he's been on the show numerous times. And he's such a dynamic young man who is the co-founder and executive director of Damascus. And he works with young people, and they're actually marking a 25th anniversary coming up of life-changing Catholic youth summer camps. So I'm excited to talk about this because it is almost technically summer now on the calendar, although, of course, in America, we start marking summer Memorial Day weekend unofficially anyway. But this is so important, and I can't wait to get his take on Pope Leo and his outreach to young people, especially the beautiful comments the Holy Father made over the weekend in Chicago, urging young people to enter or re-enter into that personal relationship with the Lord and to really to search. And if you have a longing or a searching in your heart, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing because God is calling you. And of course, quoting Augustine, our hearts are restless until they rest in thee. So there's so much to discuss in terms of what's happening in the church right now and how that could really bring about a change and a growth in even more young people coming in or back to the faith. And also, of course, the canonizations coming up on September 7th of both Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis. So we'll discuss with Dan. And then, very excited to have my good friend Anthony DeStefano back on. I don't know where he finds time to work. I mean, people tell me I write a lot of books. I mean, seriously, this man cranks them out like crazy. And this new one, so excited to talk with him about it. The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. Love it. So we have Dan DeMattei and also Anthony DeStefano on with us in the first hour of the program. So I hope you can stay tuned. We have some exciting discussions coming up for hour number two on EWTN's Radio Extra. So make sure you tune into that as well. Let's take a look at the weather. The National Weather Service is still talking about some pretty rough weather in the central part of the country. So we have severe thunderstorms producing damaging winds, hail, and a few tornadoes. Now, that's expected throughout today across parts of the Central Plains and into the lower to mid-Missouri Valley. They're also saying heavy to excessive rainfall could produce flooding across portions of the Ohio Valley and into the central Appalachians through Tuesday. So keep that in mind if you're in any of the affected areas. We're so glad you tuned in to EWTN's Catholic Connection. Now it is time to check the news and never a dull moment, a very busy day. So let's take a look at the news here on EWTN on a Tuesday. A renewed impulse is required to proclaim and transmit the faith. This means placing Jesus Christ at the center. The Holy Father, Pope Leo XIV, giving this reminder as Vatican News reports when addressing the Italian Bishops' Conference at the Vatican's Hall of Blessings, and that happened today. In his remarks, the Pope called for witness and, most of all, helping people live a personal relationship with the Lord. Saying we live in a time of great fragmentation, the Holy Father calling for returning to the foundations of the faith, to the kerygma. This, he said, is a first great commitment that motivates all others, namely bringing Christ into the veins of humanity by renewing and sharing the apostolic mission. The Holy Father inviting the Italian bishops to discern ways to bring the good news to everyone with pastoral actions capable of reaching those who are furthest away and with suitable tools for renewing catechesis and the language of proclamation. The bishops of the U.S. are calling on their government, the United States of America, and the whole international community as well, to exert every effort to renew multilateral diplomatic engagement for the attainment of durable peace between Israel and Iran. In a statement published by the USCCB, the Bishops' Conference Bishop A. Elias Zaidan, the chair of the Committee on International Justice and Peace, he warned that further proliferation of nuclear weapons in the Middle East, as well as the escalation of violence and perils of fragile stability remaining in the region. Quoting the Pope, Bishop Zaidan said, "It's a duty of all countries to support the cause of peace by initiating paths of reconciliation and promoting solutions that guarantee security and dignity for all." Meanwhile, as Mark Mayfield tells us, the situation in the Middle East could have an impact on why the president returned. He's back at the White House today after leaving the G7 summit in Canada a little bit early.
The president said his departure was due to the conflict between Israel and Iran and that he needed to focus on the situation.
Well, I have to be back. Very important. I want to just thank our great host. He did a fantastic job. Thank you in Canada. But you probably see what I see. And I have to be back as soon as I can.
Summit attendee French President Emmanuel Macron told reporters he heard Trump was leaving to work on a ceasefire proposal. Trump fired off a response on social media, insisting Macron had no idea why he was returning to Washington, but saying it certainly has nothing to do with the ceasefire. I'm Mark Mayfield.
The leaders, meanwhile, of the G7 nations agreeing that Iran should never have a nuclear weapon and that Israel does have the right to defend itself. The joint statement issued by the heads of the U.S., U.K., France, Germany, Italy, Canada, Japan, and the EU at the G7 summit in Canada yesterday, the statement calling Iran the principal source of regional instability and terror and promised to safeguard energy market stability. It comes again as the president announced yesterday he would be leaving the summit early due to the rising tensions in the Middle East. Tammy Trujillo tells us federal prosecutors are now filing murder and stalking charges against a suspect accused of killing a Minnesota state lawmaker and her husband over the weekend.
That means Vance Bolter could face the death penalty if convicted. He's also charged with shooting and wounding Democratic State Senator John Hoffman and his wife. Minnesota acting U.S. Attorney Joseph Thompson says Bolter visited the homes of two other lawmakers earlier with the intention of harming them, but one was not home and he was scared off by police at the home of the other. Over 45 state and federal officials were listed in Bolter's notebook as potential targets. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
The curfew hours for a 1 square mile section of downtown Los Angeles are being reduced. This man owns a business in Little Tokyo and says it has been a tough past week and a half.
It has been closed since last Friday, I want to say 8 days. We opened yesterday and today, and it's been super slow.
As of Monday night, the curfew is now in place from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. It had been starting at 8 p.m. since it began last week. The curfew was put in place after anti-ICE protests in the area turned violent and several businesses were looted. A woman is facing a felony charge, accused of reaching for her gun at downtown Pueblo's No Kings protest this past Sunday in Colorado. Brandon Martin was one of the volunteer security guards who took her to the ground and says things escalated quickly.
Security man in front started yelling, don't grab your gun, don't touch your gun. I was standing behind her and all I said was, ma'am, please don't do this. This is not going to go the way you think it is. And as soon as I saw her grab it, that's when I grabbed her hand and took her to the ground and just held on until law enforcement got there.
Police in Pueblo arresting 54-year-old Laura Hall after witnesses and video show her reaching toward a holstered pistol during a tense exchange with protesters. Pistol with 10 rounds, but it wasn't loaded. She claimed she was being pushed and only reached down to adjust her holster. In court on Monday, she was charged with felony menacing and disrupting a lawful assembly. She asked for the charges to be dropped, but the judge said that wasn't possible. She's now out of jail on a $10,000 bond. And Scott Pringle tells us Mayor Eric Adams is calling for a ban on face coverings during protests following the weekend's large No Kings Day demonstrations in New York City.
A new state law makes it illegal to wear a mask with the intent to avoid identification or arrest while committing a crime or fleeing the scene. However, Mayor Eric Adams tells New York One the law just doesn't go far enough to discourage disorderly conduct from people hiding their faces during demonstrations. He says there were a number of what he calls outside agitators at the No Kings Day protests who were wearing masks. Scott Pringle, NBC News Radio, New York.
Meanwhile, masking policies are being scrutinized now across the country, including in the state of California. There, state lawmakers are introducing new legislation aimed at making law enforcement officials, including federal agents, provide better identification and not hide their faces with things like masks. The decision follows ongoing protests across the country against the actions of ICE. The bill aims for more transparency and public safety. Lawmakers also say it takes away the idea of what they call the secret police. It may face an uphill battle, though, as federal agents, including ICE agents, typically work under federal immigration law and not laws of the state. And today is the day former longtime New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez goes to prison. He was hoping for a last-minute pardon from the president, but White House officials say nothing is being considered at this point. The Democrat will start his 11-year prison sentence in Pennsylvania after being found guilty of a bribery scheme involving Menendez accepting cash, gold bars, and a Mercedes, as well as acting as a foreign agent for Egypt. His wife, Nadine, will also be sentenced. That comes up in September after she was also found guilty for her role in the scheme. Purdue Pharma is entering a $7.4 billion settlement with 55 U.S. states and territories. The states and territories accuse the company behind OxyContin of fueling the nationwide opioid crisis by aggressively marketing the products. The settlement will also end the Sackler family's ownership of Purdue Pharma. Money from that settlement will go to state and local governments, individuals, and Native American tribes. Since 1999, there have been more than 850,000 opioid-related overdose deaths in the U.S. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control. Brian Shook tells us a World War II-era bomb washing ashore on a Florida beach.
Children playing at Inglewood Beach south of Sarasota found the inactive bomb. It was covered in barnacles. Authorities identified it as a suspected MK-15 airdrop bomb. It was transported to MacDill Air Force Base for further examination. I'm Brian Shook.
The future in home decor chain At Home is filing furniture and home decor chain At Home filing for bankruptcy. They're seeking Chapter 11 protection. At Home's CEO says a Texas-based company is operating against a backdrop of an increasingly dynamic and rapidly evolving trade environment as we navigate, they say, the impact of tariffs. There are currently more than 200 At Home locations in the U.S. And Sara Lee Kessler tells us Joey Chestnut, well, you know it's summer when you hear these stories, is returning to Coney Island this July 4th for Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest.
41-year-old Chestnut is the 16-time champ, but was barred from competing last year because he'd partnered with Impossible Foods to promote its vegetable-based Franks. Chestnut says he's thrilled to be back, and after downing a record-setting 76 dogs in Nathan's 2021 contest, he's going for 80 this time.
Go! We are live!
Chestnut holds the world's hot dog eating record after scarfing down 83 during a Netflix competition last year called Unfinished Beef. I'm Sara Lee Kessler.
83 hot dogs. Are you kidding me? Oh, apparently not. As I said, you know it's summer when you start hearing about Coney Island competitions and all that good stuff. All right, our final news story this morning. You can't believe someone would be so flippant, pun intended, about this, and make this kind of a comment and not expect to be taken to task for it. One person is in police custody after allegedly making a remark about a bomb while on a plane in Seattle. Seriously? Yeah, this is a real story. The Port of Seattle says a person was on board an Alaska Airlines flight to Walla Walla, Washington at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport over the weekend when they made the comment, and they didn't just make the comment, they made it to crew members. Okay. Officials say the crew secured the plane on a runway away from the airport while the FAA issued a ground stop. Flights scheduled to arrive at the airport were diverted to other airports or ordered to circle the airport until landing was authorized. Overall, about 400 flights were impacted. They were delayed. 6 others were canceled. All because this person thought it was funny to make a flippant remark about a bomb. The person's punishment should be to go on a plane and have it circle the airport, like, continuously for months. Anyway, just saying. Looking forward to chatting with Dan DeMattei, co-founder and executive director of Damascus, on a big anniversary for life-changing summer youth camps. And then Anthony DiStefano, miracles and more miracles. Our God is a God of miracles. He's got a new book on miracles he'll explain coming up. Welcome back, Catholic Connection. It is a Tuesday morning. It's June 17th. Hope you're having a great Tuesday. Tracking down our next guest, Dan DeMattei, all about summer camps. They've got a big anniversary that they're celebrating, and we'll talk to him as soon as we grab him on the phone. Then after that, Anthony DiStefano will be joining us. His topic will be his new book, All About Miracles, a miracle book, a simple guide to asking for the impossible. And I can't wait to talk to him about that book because I think oftentimes we, myself included, tend to put God in the box and think that, well, I shouldn't be asking for that, or, you know, that can't possibly happen, or God can't possibly make that happen for me. It's just too selfish or too big to ask. But back in my office in Michigan, I have a beautiful sign of my favorite saint and my patron saint, St. Teresa of Avila, and it says, God is disappointed in those who don't, I'm paraphrasing, those who do not ask big things of him. And so, in other words, being the God of the universe and beyond, there is no limit to what God can do if it's in his will. And that's important to keep in mind. And we'll talk about that with Anthony. Excited to chat with Dan again. Dan, I was thinking the last time we were together was in California for that big conference. How are you? Good to talk to you again. Oops, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. Okay, thought we lost you there. It's good to talk to you again. How are you?
Very good.
Oops, Sonia, like we have a bad phone connection. We'll keep trying. All right, let's talk a little bit about, tell us about the anniversary coming up of the Catholic summer youth camps.
Yeah, so we are in our 25th summer of Catholic youth summer camp, and just amazing things have been happening, great impact on kids' lives. We've opened, you know, two camps across the country, and now we're about to open our third camp this upcoming summer, and we're going to see great impact.
So how did this all begin? And have you been involved with this in the beginning? Because you seem too young to be celebrating a 25th anniversary of the summer camps.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in the beginning, my youth minister started this. I was the very first year. Essentially, we saw that a lot of our kids were going to different Protestant camps and having an encounter with Jesus outside of the church. And we decided to offer a camp where young people can have an encounter with Jesus through the life of the church, the sacrament, confession, through Mass. And so it started as a glorified vacation Bible school for 60 kids at our local parish.
All right, we're going to call you back, Dan, because we can't hear you that well. You keep going in and out, and you've got important information to share. So I'm going to ask you to hang up, and hey, it's live radio. We do this kind of thing all the time. And we will call you right back. Our wonderful producer, Richard, will give you a call back, because I want to make sure, again, that people can hear what you're saying, because it's important that we find out more information about the 25th anniversary, the season of life-changing Catholic youth summer camps. And when we get Dan back, I want to talk to him about a new report that just came out yesterday from the Pew Center for People in Public Life. And they have a section where they do all kinds of surveys, and a part of their mission in terms of all the research and the surveys that Pew does, a lot of it is based on the culture, on society, and they have a whole section dedicated to researching the impact of religion. And there's this new report that came out showing, not that this is actually a newsflash for us, but it shows that many Catholics don't fully practice their faith. And the question, this is from a USA Today article on the Pew Report, could Pope Leo's papacy change that? Now, in addition to Pope Leo, what I've been thinking about is, would it be possible for the canonizations of Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati to possibly make a huge difference as well in the lives of young people? So hopefully we can get Dan back and talk to him about that. But again, Dan is the executive director of Damascus, and we're talking about the 25th anniversary season of life-changing Catholic youth summer camp. So we're working on getting him back on the phone. But a little bit of background as well in terms of all about the camps. This is something that Dan has been doing for quite some time, and I think it's just super interesting in terms of being there for kids. You know, summer camps, I don't know how it was for you when you were growing up, but that was not something really that was very popular in terms of Catholic summer camps. There were a lot of, I think, evangelical, Protestant-type camps out there, but not so much, I think, Catholic events. Not that I would have gone. I'm not exactly a camping type person. As my husband says, my idea of roughing it is a Hilton with that cable. But I do think it's awesome that they have these opportunities for young people. And he actually is a motivational speaker that's been doing this for quite some time. He preaches the good news in the hopes of really getting kids especially to embrace a faith, which I think is so, so important. Do we have Dan yet? Nope, we don't have Dan. Okay, obviously he's not there. All right. Okay, well, we are going to move along then and talk about another topic. And just a reminder, coming up, Anthony DiStefano is going to be joining us on his new book, The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. Getting back to that and going into Anthony's interview, which I'm sure will be really fun and interesting, I wonder how many of us ask big things of God. Something just to think about and pray about as we're going into the interview with Anthony and his brand new book. Because as I said, I often think, and I know I've done this before, previously, I think I've gotten a little bit better at realizing that God can do anything, and he can do anything with our lives if we let him, and if we're open to his will. But do we realize that there are miracles all around us all the time? And how many of us think of miracles only, let's say, in terms of the big things, like the Eucharistic miracles, which are phenomenal, and we're so blessed to have those and so many of them in the church? Or let's say, obviously, the miracles of the approved Marian apparitions. Amazing. Whether you've been to Fatima or Portugal or Lourdes, those are all incredible miracles. Answered prayer, though, that's a miracle too. Having a God-sidence, that's a little miracle too. Everything around us, in terms of creation, in terms of the development of the human person, is a miracle. And so, again, I think we have to kind of broaden our horizons and think in a bigger way when we think about miracles and not limit ourselves, not that these things are limiting in the sense of that they're not huge, as I mentioned earlier, but miracles are all around us. And sometimes we get into a rut where we take so much around us for granted, so much for granted. And it just really, I think, puts God in a box. I always just like to look at nature, and I am amazed, for example, at nature in terms of the different types of trees and different types of flowers. A couple of weeks ago, we were in a local garden store here in our little area of central Italy. I had to get some things for the backyard. We have a tiny, tiny backyard on our property. And I was looking at all the flowers, and there were so many of them. This is one little garden store. And I kept thinking to myself, first of all, how do you know what all these flowers are? I think people have to be really smart in order to understand all of this. But I was saying to God, I'm like, you know, Lord, a dozen, two dozen would have been enough. But yet there were so many. And even one type of flower had four, five, six, seven different colors of that same flower. Or you look at the different types of trees that were available if you had big property and you wanted to do some tree planting. That to me is all miraculous. So again, that's why I'm so excited about Anthony's new book, The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. If we look out at creation alone, if you look at your child, right, your children, your grandchildren, if you look out at the stars, how can we not believe in miracles all around us? And we will discuss with Anthony DeStefano. We'll work on getting Dan back on. Sorry about that, but we couldn't understand him and we want to make sure you can hear people clearly. Anthony's up next, though. We look forward to it. Stay tuned. Anthony DeStefano, his new book, The Miracle Book. So excited about this. A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. Anthony! Buongiorno, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Always great to be back on your show.
Talking about you, of course, I'm sure your ears are ringing and prepping folks, our listeners, for this wonderful new book that, I mean, I don't know how many books you crank out a year, because in addition to your beautiful children's book, now you have this book. So how many books is this for you now, my friend?
It's got to be around 30 total, but it's just, you know, it is. Last year, I just had one of those very inspiring type of years. Every time I turned around, there was some kind of blessing from God. It's not always like that, you know. It's not always like that. But last year, I wrote these things, and they're coming out this year. So it's making me look like a genius, but I'm not. It's just God was so kind. He took pity on me last year and gave me all kinds of great thoughts.
Well, I love this because this is kind of in line with my not bucket list, but the book I wrote about God-sidences and listening for God, because I talk about God-sidences in that book and how there's miracles around us all the time, but sometimes we don't recognize them. Is that one of the reasons why you wrote this book?
Yeah, I did. You know, basically, this is a practical, it's a nuts and bolts guide to praying for a miracle. You know, the miracle might have to do with your health or your finances or family problems or just feelings of anxiety or hopelessness. But I think that regardless of your level of religious faith, even if you have no faith at all, as a matter of fact, there comes a time in life when, you know, we all need supernatural help. That's the only way to put it. And I think that a lot of us are suffering badly, but we don't know how to go about asking God for anything other than to beg him. You know, mm-hmm. We beg, we plead, we negotiate. we promise we'll do absolutely anything if only God will give us this one request. And then if God doesn't answer our prayer in the way we want, sometimes we lose faith, or we get angry with God, or we sink into despair. I thought that there had to be a better way. There had to be a better method of praying for a miracle that guarantees at least the best possible chance of God saying yes to us, or results at least in God answering us in a way that gives us peace and satisfies our souls. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of years of research on this subject. I read every single book on miracles out there, including your book, which talks about these kinds of things. And I think I did succeed in finding that better way. And this book doesn't use any gimmicks. You know, I don't provide any magic formulas. The book's got an imprimatur from the church. It's been endorsed by many Catholic leaders, including Cardinal Dolan. But I think I offer solid, biblically-based, theologically sound principles that I think can dramatically increase a person's chances of obtaining a miracle.
I do think we tend to put God in the box sometimes, don't we? And thinking that, oh, that could never happen, or he would never grant that prayer, answer my prayer in that particular way.
That's right. I mean, and what did Mother Angelica used to say, that if you're not willing to do the ridiculous, you don't give God a chance to do the
impossible.
Mm-hmm. The impossible. Mm-hmm. God could do anything he wants, you know? I mean, and yes, we do put him in a box all the time. I mean, you know, even if something as incredible as the parting of the Red Sea, you know, think of that biblical miracle. You know, I knew a priest once. He said, look, God created all the oceans of the world. What's no big deal for him to move a little water around?
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
So, yes. And one of the reasons why we don't get miracles is because we don't ask God. Believe it or not, mm-hmm. Some people need a miracle, and they don't ask God for the miracle. And guess what? Sometimes if you don't ask, you won't get.
I was saying in opening the show today, talking about a quote from my patron, my favorite saint, St. Teresa of Avila, and I can't remember the quote exactly, but I have this sign, her image of her with this quote back in my office in Michigan, where she says that God withholds himself from no one who asks. And then she also says, he wants you to ask big things. He gets disappointed when you don't ask for big things.
Yes, exactly. And as you know, anyone who reads the Bible knows God, Jesus makes some pretty amazing promises. You know, he says things like asking, you know, you'll be answered, and knock on the door will be opened, and if you have faith, you can move mountains. And you know, sometimes people find those statements mysterious, because even holy people who pray for miracles sometimes don't get what they want. And the premise of this book is that those statements that Christ made are 100% true, but they are also not straight promises. They're paradoxes. They involve paradoxes, and those sometimes are seeming contradictions, and they involve mm-hmm. sort of doing pairs of things that seem like they're in contradiction, but they're not. For instance, having a decisive faith and also a persistent faith. You know, surrendering God to completely, yet being completely self-reliant and doing things. So this book talks about how to ask for those big things that God wants us to ask for.
Talking with, of course, my friend Anthony DiStefano, author, speaker, and just an amazing contributor to the faith in terms of helping us understand different things. And his children's books are a huge hit. This is for those of us who are a little bit, well, maybe the child at heart, right? The book is entitled The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. Let's talk a little bit about, I don't know if we have time for it right now, but just give us a little hint. We have two minutes left, and then we'll pick it up after the break. But Father Brian, tell us about the priest named Father Brian and a story in the beginning of the book about how he prayed for a sick baby's healing.
Sure. You know, he's a Catholic priest in New Jersey. He's been a priest for close to 40 years. I call him the miracle priest because miracles seem to follow him wherever he goes. And quickly, years ago, Father Brian was asked to pray for a newborn baby who was critically ill. His kidneys were failing. He was basically on the verge of death. Around the same time, Father Brian visited a man in his parish who was terminally ill with cancer. And he had been a very sweet, gentle man, but he became very embittered and angry and even abusive to his family because of, you know, the stress of his terminal illness. Anyway, during their conversation, Father Brian told the man about the dying baby. And he made the bold suggestion to the sick man to offer up his suffering for the child. And to his great surprise, the man agreed, and even more surprisingly, the man went back to being peaceful and gentle again. Now, he died soon afterward. He didn't receive a miracle, but he died very calm, very resigned to God's will. Here's the point of the story. Not long after the man's funeral, Father Brian received a phone call from the baby's mother, and she was crying hysterically. And he thought, well, the baby died too. You know, he let out a sigh. But instead, he was stunned to learn that the child's two kidneys had begun to function. He was now suddenly and perfectly healthy. And this was the doctor. This is something the doctors couldn't explain. And he grew up to be a very healthy young man. And the story contains so many mysterious paradoxes of the faith. The sick man's acceptance and offering of his suffering are what restored peace to him. In his weakest moment, he found strength to help someone else through his sacrifice. And, of course, his death coincided with the baby's miraculous recovery. So I say in my book, paradoxes like these remind us that peace can come through pain, strength through weakness, and life through death. It's incredible what God can do when we pray.
Yeah, that really reminds me of a situation when my sister died of cancer back in 2016, and she died after finding out that her son, my nephew, our godson, was expecting. But then when he, right after she died, and we were down in Florida making the funeral arrangements, his wife, my nephew's wife, my niece Erica, was at the OBGYN's office with her mom. And literally, it was the morning we were planning the funeral, and Annie knew that they were expecting, but he didn't know that they were expecting twins. And so the first thing I thought of was, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. You know, Donna passes away. She knew she was never going to see her grandchild, but we got two. In replace, it was just the same thing, that paradox, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Powerful.
Amazing.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will talk more, of course, about this great book with our friend Anthony DiStefano. The new book is The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. And we'll tell you how to get it as well when we return on a Tuesday. The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible, with our good friend Anthony DiStefano. And Anthony, have you taped a bookmark yet? I think you did with Doug, didn't you, on this one?
Not yet. But okay. He did endorse the book.
Oh,
Doug, the president of EWTN did endorse this book.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of, because I think he mentioned to me in passing recently when I mentioned I was going to have you on the show. I love your books. They're fantastic. And I think I enjoy your children's books as much as I do your other books, because the children's books, I think, are great catechesis for adults as well.
They're more of a joy to write, that's for sure. It's hard to write books for adults.
Now, you were talking about, in your own experience last year, you just really felt very strongly the presence of God, which was one of the reasons that you wrote the book and what prompted you to put this down in words. Can you share any of those experiences with our listeners?
You know, last year I made a decision that I was going to go to Eucharistic Adoration at least once a week. I try to go to Mass, daily Mass, when I can, but sometimes it's just hard because of my schedule. But I can always go to an adoration chapel at some time, even if it's sometimes at 5 o'clock in the morning or something. And you know, when you go to the Lord like that, when you go right before Him in His physical presence, the same Lord that walked in Palestine 2,000 years ago, the same Lord that healed and raised people from the dead, when you do that, miracles start to happen in your life, whether you ask for them or not. And in this case, I always prayed before the Blessed Sacrament for ideas. I always, because I'm an author, and I pray to the author of life. God is the author of life, and I pray to Mary. Mary is the mother of the author of life. And when I pray as an author to the author of life for ideas, and when you go there in front of the Blessed Sacrament, I just had my most incredible year ever of coming up with ideas. It wasn't always in front of the Blessed Sacrament, but it was sometimes praying the rosary, sometimes just, you know, you're walking around and a thunderbolt hits you, an idea.
Right.
And so I urge that practice to everyone.
So how do we get the book?
It's available. Today's the launch date. I think there was a little mistake on Amazon, and that's going to be available next week on Amazon, but Barnes & Noble, Sophia Institute Press, Books A Million, you can get it anywhere.
One of the points you made, which I think is really, really important, I want to dive into this a little bit more deeply, the paradox of being self-reliant while surrendering totally to God.
This is one of the most important things because, you know, on the one hand, you're expected to act, to go to the doctor when you're sick, to go to your lawyer when you're in legal trouble, to fight injustice when you see it. You have to use your talents to solve your problems. You can't just sit back and do nothing. You have to fulfill your obligations in life. You can't be completely passive and expect God to do all the work. But at the same time, after you've done all you can do, you know, after you do that, you've got to let go. You've got to relinquish. You have to trust that whatever the outcome you're working for and praying for, that's ultimately in God's hands, and you have to try to be at peace, even if you're afraid that things might not turn out the way you hope. In other words, you have to say what Jesus said in the Garden of Gethsemane, not my will, but your will
be right. done.
So,
right.
yes, you have to be self-reliant. You have to use every gift and resource God has given you, but you can't ever make the mistake of thinking that you're in ultimate control. You have to subordinate your will to God's, and you have to say what St. Augustine said, pray as though everything depended on God. Work as though everything depended on you. That's the balance you're trying to achieve in the Christian life, and I think that's the sweet spot, if I could put it that way, when it comes to obtaining miracles.
Amen. Amen. So why is it important with that in mind to be specific when we pray?
That's another paradox, to be specific and yet open to God. There's genuine value in being specific in our prayers. Look, precision in prayer shows God that we trust Him with the intimate details of our lives, just as we would a close friend. Look, if the goal as a Christian is to have a personal relationship with the Lord, you have to share those kinds of details. That's what relationship is all about, sharing. Also, when we make specific requests, we're acknowledging that God isn't just the Lord of the church we belong to. He's the Lord of our families. He's the Lord of our finances. He's the Lord of our vacations. He's the Lord of our bedrooms. And finally, when we're precise in our prayers, we're also acknowledging the fact that God doesn't view our lives, you know, from a distance, like that old song says, but that He's right here, right now, deeply involved, and that He cares about everything we care about. But at the same time, Teresa, that we're being precise, we simultaneously have to be open to God's will, radically open. The reason is that we don't always know what's truly best for us, even when we're praying with great sincerity. Many times we don't even really know what we want. But our desires seem real, but they're always wrapped up in emotions and influenced by fear and pride and desire. Openness to God's will shows that we trust God because He can see the big picture. He can see the future. He can see what's best for us, not just in the moment, but forever. And when you embrace this miracle paradox by being precise and yet radically open, that's when all the grace-filled divine possibilities are opened up to you because of your willingness to give God the maximum amount of faith and surrender.
It is a challenge, though, because at the same time, you're open to God's will and you just put it out there, but you're like, okay. I think part of the problem you just hit upon the situation, a lot of people will be praying for something very specific, and it may seem like at the time for them something that's very, very good. For example, let's say a couple is praying to have a child because it hasn't happened, and they just can't seem to understand when they're so open to life and they so want to raise a family why God is not giving them a child right now at that given time, or maybe ever. But then what happens is they say, okay, Lord, we're going to go ahead, and if that it's not your will for us to have our own children, we're going to adopt a child who needs a family. And then they end up like a week later after they have an adoption, they get pregnant, and they get pregnant again. That, to me, is that sign of God saying, okay, I'm going to bless you in more ways than one. Yeah.
You know, before I was born, my mother had a miscarriage, and she was devastated. If it wasn't for that baby dying, I would have never been conceived, and I wouldn't be on the show. We wouldn't have this book. Same thing happened with my wife. A few months before she was conceived, her mother had a miscarriage. Now, was it wrong for our mothers to be devastated by these miscarriages? Of course not. They couldn't see that God had a different plan, that He wanted that from all eternity, for some reason, God wanted me to be born. He wanted my wife to be born. You know, but we have to trust that God has a bigger plan, even when it comes to those horrible tragedies in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with author Anthony DiStefano, his latest book, The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. What about, Anthony, though, of people who are really, really downtrodden, if they're at the end of their rope and they desperately need an answer? How do they pray right now?
Well, if you're listening right now and you desperately need a miracle, first of all, you got to remember you're not alone. God sees you. He knows exactly what you're going through. He's known from all eternity that you'd need a miracle at this moment and that you'd be tuning into the Teresa Tomeo program, you know. He cares about you more than you can know. Keeping that in mind, I would say there are six things you should do. First, whenever you're experiencing anxiety, you got to take a breath and try to be calm. As the Psalms say, be still and know that I am God. Try to put your emotions on the side for a moment. You don't have to feel faith. Think faith. We all know faith is the most important biblical requirement for a miracle. But instead of getting all worked up emotionally, make a decisive act of the will to God that he has the power and desire to help you. Second, make a definitive decision to be sorry for all the sins you've ever committed and resolve to be a better person, holier person. Christ said that if you want to gain your life, you have to first lose it. And in the Bible, Jesus used miracles to turn sinners around all the time. Jesus was concerned about the inner person more than the outer person. The miracles were always a sign of the transformation of a person's soul that he was after. So if you need a miracle, you got to make an effort to clear the deck spiritually. Ask God's forgiveness, be willing to change. That's what God wants, so do it. Third, take whatever action you need to take. That's what we spoke about before. Winston Churchill said, you know, if you're going through hell, the best thing to do is keep going. Don't allow anxiety to paralyze you. Have that difficult conversation. You know, make that annoying phone call. In other words, take a step, any step. It doesn't have to be perfect. God will meet you where you are. Fourth, get the community of believers on your side. Make use of the power of intercessory prayer. Don't keep your need for a miracle a secret. Tell as many people as you can. You don't have to tell them your specific intention, but, you know, go out and ask them to pray for your special intention, and God will know that what it is. And don't forget to ask the angels and saints to pray for you, and especially Our Lady. For goodness sake, get Our Lady involved. Remember, Mary isn't just the mother of God. She's the mother of miracles. Mm-hmm. Finally, be radically open to God's will. Tell him exactly what you want, just what we just said, but be clear and precise, but at the same time, echo the words of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Not my will, but yours be done. That's the model for all miracle prayers. And finally, and this is very important, when you pray for your specific miracle intention, be sure to pray for God's greater glory too. In other words, ask God to use your miracle to deepen the faith of the people around you, to make them realize that God is responsible for the great blessing you're receiving, not you. When you see God's glory in your prayers, you acknowledge that your request isn't just about, you know, fulfilling a selfish desire, but it's about spreading the faith. And that reflects not only a humble disposition, but a mature faith, and I think one that's more worthy and deserving of a miracle.
How important is it when those prayers are answered, even if we don't realize it, or when we do realize it, how important is it to keep, and I call it in my book, You're Listening for God, I call it a God Sentences Journal, to make note of when things happen. And it doesn't even have to be an answer to prayer. It could be just you're driving along, you're thinking about someone, and then that person's favorite song comes up on the radio to make that connection. Or you're thinking about God in a certain way, you are praying, and then you look over and the marquee has a particular scripture verse up there or a particular statement. Those are all little miracles in our lives. And I think if we would just take the time to remember them and jot them down, that when we're having a rough day, we can remember that God, as you said earlier, is aware of our situation and he's watching us, not from a distance, but very, very personally and closely.
Yeah, you've got to. I started making a list years ago just for what you just said. This is such great practical advice, because there are going to come times when you don't feel faith.
Right.
You know, faith
right,
is not,
exactly.
It's a decision. And sometimes you're not going to feel it. Your feelings go up and down. So you've got to be able to go to a list and look at this long list of all the times that God did intervene in your life. And then you know that the same God who brought you through all of that in your life is either going to shield you from danger now, or he's going to give you the strength to make it through wherever you're going. And that list is very helpful in doing that.
Yeah. Can I tell you a little miracle that happened right before I came over to Italy this time around?
Please.
It's something that I've talked about it on the air. And maybe I didn't. I think I talked to it with some friends of mine. So right before we left, we're getting ready and everything. Of course, everything's happening with the Pope, and I'd already done some news interviews, some secular media interviews. And I was really praying. I was on my way running errands because we were packing and whatnot. And I was praying, asking God. I said, God, please allow the media to use good, solid Catholics. It doesn't have to be me. If you want me back on there, that's fine. I don't care. But we've got so many great people on EWTN that can address these different topics. Really good, solid Catholics who know the faith and are so personable. I said, please, you know, just can I ask you to use them and have the media turn to them? And I pull into this parking lot getting ready to go and do my latest errand. And literally, Anthony, right after I said that prayer, I look up and it was right in front of the local Baptist church by our house. And they always have these great messages on their marquees. And they had a verse from Philippians. And the verse was, you will shine like stars in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It is
amazing.
And it reflects this need we have for this new, we have to promote the new evangelization. And I think that there's going to be a new wave of miracles, a new age of miracles to accompany this new evangelization, because we're facing the kind of persecution that the early church faced.
Yep.
Maybe not with lions you know, in gladiators, but with ridicule.
Yeah, but look what happened. God help us. Those poor people in Nigeria, all those people that were just killed a couple of days ago, and all the persecution,
right.
and the, literally the blood martyrdom, the red martyrdom that's going on. But again, little things like that, God saying, don't worry, I'm going to use the good people. And Anthony, I have to tell you, it was like a revolving door with me, Monsignor Landry, Matthew Bunsen, Raymond Arroyo, and going on all these different secular media all week long, locally, nationally. And I kept thinking of that verse because I was asking God, please just allow people that know the faith to be on the air, because it's such a prime time to evangelize when the whole world is watching the Catholic faith. And I just said, look, use whomever you want. You're God. You know who to put on the air, but please let them be let them be faithful Catholics, please, God. And then I saw that verse.
That's what he's going to do. Yeah. He's not going to make a blazing cross appear in the sky.
Exactly.
He's going to use secondary sources like people, like us.
Yeah. You're amazing. Love your work, Anthony. You're the best. Thank you so much. Beautiful new book, The Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible, from our friends at Sophia. We'll be right back. It's a beautiful day here on EWTN, the Global Catholic Radio Network, EWTN.com. It's June 17th. Are we having a great day? Coming up in the second hour on EWTN's Radio Extra, we're going to be chatting with the one, the only, Kelly Solomon, with our Newman Guide News. And we are going to take a look at two soon-to-be saints, Pier Giorgio Frassati from Torino and Carlo Acutis, originally from Milan, and of course he is buried in Assisi. So we're going to talk about these two young men from very different time frames, about a little less than 100 years apart. It was Pierre, of course, in the 20th century, and then, of course, Carlo in the early 21st century. So just two amazing men who are on fire for the Lord and actually had a huge impact on their families. They both came from very well-to-do families, and their parents were not faithful people. I mean, they gave them their sacraments, but they did not practice the faith regularly. And Pier Giorgio came from a very, very troubled home, actually. His parents were always fighting, and that had a big influence on him. Anyway, two great lives having a huge impact, and we'll discuss the impact that this could have, and from what Kelly's seen in terms of young people with whom she works, on their lives and their faith. And speaking of that, prior to the interview with Kelly, back timing in the wrong way, actually, we have U.S. Catholics not practicing their faith, a new Pew report out. And I'm wondering what impact the two saints and also Pope Leo could have on that. We will discuss coming up. Don't touch that dial, as we say in Radio Land. Well, you do need to touch the dial and go to EWTM Radio Extra, more specifically. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
On a Tuesday morning, the second hour of CC with TT on EWTN. It's Catholic Connection. Appreciate your listenership, EWTN.com, for all the information. Coming up on the program in our Two Senses segment, right after the news and the weather and all that good stuff, there is a new report out from the Pew Research Center for People in the Press, and this is specifically about religion. They have a whole huge mission that they do, where they do all these, they're secular, but they do all these different studies on various influences in our country and our world. And they have a new report out on Catholics saying that, oh, this is not exactly a shocker or a newsflash to us. It's something that we are concerned about and work on, one of the reasons why we exist with EWTN, and the church exists. Why does a church exist? To evangelize. Many Catholics, however, in the U.S. are not fully practicing their faith. And so there is a very interesting article in USA Today asking the question, could Pope Leo's papacy change that? Now, we'll look at that. I'll share some of the points in the article and also what Pew is saying. But prior to that, I also want to talk about, which will lead us into our next segment after that with Kelly Solomon, because it's Tuesdays and we have Newman Guide News with Kelly Solomon from the Cardinal Newman Society. Kelly and I are going to be discussing the beautiful ministry of two young blesseds who are going to be canonized on the same day, Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and Blessed Carlo Acutis. The new date is September 7th. And so what I want to discuss also in two cents is a lot of people are emailing me and calling me through my website, TeaseItaly, TravelItalyExpert.com, because they made plans to go to either Carlo's canonization back in April, which was the original date, April 27th, or August 3rd for the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. They have their tickets. They have their hotels. What are they going to do now? Some people back in April went anyway because there were other youth events and they couldn't reschedule. But if you have plans to go to Italy and you were hoping to be there for the canonization, your dates don't work out, I have some ideas for you. And we were just kind of talking about this a little bit. One of the ideas is based on what we discussed with Anthony DiStefano in his book on miracles, in terms of maybe this is something that we just need to put into God's hands and let it be. I will explain. So we'll talk about that as well as this Pew Report. And as I mentioned, the two saints, soon to be saints, Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati, both of whom will be canonized on September 7th, which is just so amazing that they're going to be canonized together. Weather-wise, we are seeing a lot of issues across the country as soon as I pull up the weather again. But the big thing has to do with thunderstorms. I mean, we're still experiencing a lot of rain in various parts of the country. So you need to keep that in mind if you are traveling anywhere. And we'll give you the weather as soon as my computer cooperates. But they're talking about, for example, the central part of the country. Severe thunderstorms producing damaging winds, hail, and a few tornadoes as well expected throughout the day today. And this will happen, according to the National Weather Service, across parts of the Central Plains and lower to mid-Missouri Valley. Heavy to excessive rainfall could produce flooding across portions of the Ohio Valley into the central Appalachians, and that is through today, as we mentioned. It's 3 minutes past the hour. We're so glad you're tuned into Catholic Connection. It is time to check the news, though, here on EWTN on a Tuesday. The Pope says a renewed impulse is required to proclaim and transmit the faith. This means placing Jesus Christ at the center again. Pope Leo XIV giving this reminder when addressing the Italian Bishops' Conference in the Vatican's Hall of Blessings. And that happened this morning at the Vatican. In his remarks, the Pope calling for a strong witness and most of all helping people live a personal relationship with Jesus. He said, "We live in a time of great fragmentation," and he called for returning to the foundations of the faith and to the kerygma. This, he said, is the great commitment that motivates all the others, namely bringing Christ into the veins of humanity by renewing and sharing the apostolic mission. Pope Leo inviting the Italian bishops to discern ways to bring the good news to everyone, with pastoral actions capable of reaching those who are furthest away, and with suitable tools, he said, for renewing catechesis and the language of proclamation. The bishops of the U.S. are calling on the U.S. government and the whole international community to exert every effort to renew multilateral diplomatic engagement for the attainment of a durable peace between Israel and Iran. In a statement published by the U.S. Bishops' Conference, Bishop A. Elias Zaiden, who's the chair of the conference's Committee on International Justice and Peace, he said the further proliferation of nuclear weapons in the Middle East, as well as the escalation of violence, causes a fragile stability remaining in the region. And quoting the Pope, Pope Leo XIV, Bishop Zaiden said, "It's the duty of all countries to support the cause of peace by initiating paths of reconciliation and promoting solutions that guarantee security and dignity for all." Mark Mayfield tells us the Middle East had an impact, apparently, on why President Trump is back at the White House after leaving the G7 summit in Canada early.
The president said his departure was due to the conflict between Israel and Iran and that he needed to focus on the situation.
"Well, I have to be back. Very important. I want to just thank our great host. You did a fantastic job. Thank you in Canada. But you probably see what I see. And I have to be back as soon as I can."
Summit attendee French President Emmanuel Macron told reporters he heard Trump was leaving to work on a ceasefire proposal. Trump fired off a response on social media, insisting Macron had no idea why he was returning to Washington, but saying it certainly has nothing to do with the ceasefire. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Meanwhile, the leaders of the G7 nations agreeing that Iran should never have a nuclear weapon and that Israel does have the right to defend itself. That joint statement issued by the heads of the United States, the UK, France, Germany, Italy, Canada, Japan, and the EU at the G7 summit in Canada yesterday. The statement calling Iran the principal source of regional instability and terror and promise to safeguard energy market stability. And again, this comes as President Trump announced yesterday he would be leaving the summit early due to the rising tensions in the Middle East. Tammy Trujillo tells us a federal prosecutor is now filing murder and stalking charges against a suspect accused of killing a Minnesota state lawmaker and her husband over the weekend.
That means Vance Bolter could face the death penalty if convicted. He's also charged with shooting and wounding Democratic State Senator John Hoffman and his wife. Minnesota acting U.S. Attorney Joseph Thompson says Bolter visited the homes of two other lawmakers earlier with the intention of harming them, but one was not home and he was scared off by police at the home of the other. Over 45 state and federal officials were listed in Bolter's notebook as potential targets. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
The curfew hours for a one-square-mile section of downtown L.A. are being reduced. This man owns a business in Little Tokyo and says it's been a tough past week and a half.
It has been closed since last Friday, I want to say 8 days. We opened yesterday and today, and it's been super slow.
As of Monday night, the curfew is now in place from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. local time. It had been starting at 8 p.m. since it began last week. The curfew put in place after anti-ICE protests in the area turned violent and several businesses were also damaged and looted. A woman facing a felony charge accused of reaching for her gun at downtown Pueblo, Colorado's No Kings protest this past Saturday. Brandon Martin was one of the volunteer security guards who took her to the ground and says things escalated quickly.
Security man in front started yelling, don't grab your gun, don't touch your gun. I was standing behind her and all I said was, ma'am, please don't do this. This is not going to go the way you think it is. And as soon as I saw her grab it, that's when I grabbed her hand and took her to the ground and just held on until law enforcement got there.
Pueblo police arresting 54-year-old Laura Hall after witnesses and videos show her reaching toward a holstered pistol during a tense exchange with protesters. That's when volunteer security stepped in. Police say Hall was carrying a pistol with 10 rounds, but the gun was not loaded. She claimed she was being pushed and only reached down to adjust her holster. In court yesterday, she was charged with felony menacing and disrupting a lawful assembly and asked for the charges to be dropped, but the judge denied that request. She's now out of jail, though, on a $10,000 bond. Scott Pringle tells us Mayor Eric Adams is calling for a ban on face coverings during protests following Saturday's large No King's Day demonstrations in New York City.
A new state law makes it illegal to wear a mask with the intent to avoid identification or arrest while committing a crime or fleeing the scene. However, Mayor Eric Adams tells New York One the law just doesn't go far enough to discourage disorderly conduct from people hiding their faces during demonstrations. He says there were a number of what he calls outside agitators at the No King's Day protests who were wearing masks. Scott Pringle, NBC News Radio, New York.
Meanwhile, masking of a different kind being looked at in California, or unmasking. Masking policies are being scrutinized across the country, including in California. There, state lawmakers introducing legislation aimed at making law enforcement officials, including federal agents, provide better ID and not hide their faces with things such as masks. That decision follows ongoing protests across the country against the actions of ICE. The bill aims for what they call more transparency and public safety, but doesn't say anything about those taking part, as you heard with the New York City mayor in those protests. Lawmakers also say it takes away the idea of what they claim are secret police. It may face an uphill battle as federal agents, including ICE agents, simply get work under federal immigration and not state law. Today is the day former longtime New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez goes to prison. He was hoping for a last-minute pardon from the president, but the White House said nothing is being considered. The Democrat will start his 11-year prison sentence in Pennsylvania after being found guilty of a bribery scheme involving Menendez accepting cash, gold bars, and a Mercedes, as well as acting as a foreign agent for Egypt. His wife, Nadine, will be sentenced in September after she was found guilty for her role in the same scheme. Purdue Pharma entering a $7.4 billion settlement with 55 U.S. states and territories. The states and territories accuse a company behind OxyContin of fueling the nationwide opioid crisis by aggressively marketing the products. The settlement will also end the Sackler family's ownership of the company. Money from that settlement will go to state and local governments and individuals, including Native American tribes. Since 1999, there have been more than 850,000 opioid-related overdose deaths in the U.S. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control. Brian Shook tells us about a unique story in Florida. A World War II-era bomb washed ashore on a Florida beach.
Children playing at Inglewood Beach, south of Sarasota, found the inactive bomb. It was covered in barnacles. Authorities identified it as a suspected MK-15 airdrop bomb. It was transported to MacDill Air Force Base for further examination. I'm Brian Shook.
Furniture and home decor chain At Home filing for bankruptcy, seeking Chapter 11 protection. At Home's CEO says a Texas-based company is operating against a backdrop of an increasingly dynamic and rapidly evolving trade environment. There are currently more than 200 At Home locations across the country. And Sarah Lee Kessler tells us, well, we know it's summertime when we hear these types of stories. Joey Chestnut out in Brooklyn, returning to Coney Island this July 4th for Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest.
41-year-old Chestnut is the 16-time champ, but was barred from competing last year because he'd partnered with Impossible Foods to promote its vegetable-based Franks. Chestnut says he's thrilled to be back, and after downing a record-setting 76 dogs in Nathan's 2021 contest, he's going for 80 this time.
Go! We are live!
Chestnut holds the world's hot dog eating record after scarfing down 83 during a Netflix competition last year called Unfinished Beef. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
Finally, in our news segment, almost 14 minutes past the hour, you just wonder what people are thinking when they pull stunts like this, or why they weren't thinking, perhaps, in the first place. One person in police custody after allegedly making a flippant remark about a bomb while on a plane in Seattle. The Port of Seattle says a person was on board an Alaska Airlines flight to Walla Walla at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport over the weekend when they made the comment, not just making the comment generally, but they made it to crew members. Officials say the crew secured the plane on a runway from the airport while the FAA issued a ground stop. Flights scheduled to arrive at the airport were diverted to other airports or ordered to circle the airport until landing. About 400 flights were delayed and 6 flights were canceled. Mamma mia. It's a Tuesday. We'll be right back on Catholic Connection. Will the Pope have an impact on the faith? I think so. What about you? We'll discuss. Hope you're having a great day. 16 minutes past the hour, June 17, 2025. Always great to be with you every hour of Catholic Connection. It's a two-hour show. If you're a new listener, welcome on board to the EWTN Radio Extra channel. Hope you listen every day to both hours. All the information can be found at EWTN.com. All right, so we now know, as of Friday, when the Pope had his first consistory in confirming canonizations with the Cardinals, that Carlo Acutis, Blessed Carlo Acutis, and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati are both going to be canonized on Sunday, September 7th. Now, we know that Carlo was scheduled to be canonized on April 27th, Divine Mercy Sunday, but that was postponed, obviously, because of the death of the Holy Father, Pope Francis, and, of course, the election, the conclave, and now we have a wonderful new Pope, Pope Leo XIV, who again announced the new date for canonization for both of these young men. So I've been getting a lot of questions, and by the way, we're going to discuss the impact that these two young blesseds are having on young people with Kelly Solomon in our next segment after 2 cents. I've been getting a lot of questions about what do we do? People are wondering, because many people had tickets for August 3rd, because that weekend actually is wrapping up some of the youth events that are going on this summer related to the Jubilee year, and so they're hoping to take part in those as well. They are wondering, do they keep their tickets or do they rebook them and go in September? All right. Well, obviously you have two options. So let's talk about this first in terms of practicality. I always tell people when they contact me and they do a consultation with me through TravelItalyExpert.com, and I do several of these a week. I love doing it. It helps me help people formulate the best itinerary so they're not overwhelmed and they can understand how it's going to work and what it's going to look like when they hit the ground. You have the option, usually, depending on the airlines. I usually fly Delta because there's a hub in my hometown of Detroit, and they're pretty flexible, of changing your flight, and they can give you credit. Sometimes if you change your flight, it will cost you some more, depending on the time and date of what you're going and what time of ticket you have. But it's worth looking into if you're thinking about going on September 7th or changing your plans from the weekend of August 3rd. Okay, or maybe you didn't go at all because you were planning on going in April and then couldn't make it over there and knew it was delayed and didn't know when the next canonization was going to be. So it'll be worth looking into. What about your hotels? Well, hopefully you booked a hotel that has a decent cancellation policy. I always tell people to make sure they look for at least a week's cancellation policy. If you can get 2 weeks, that's best because that gives you a lot of time. Even if you could maybe ask, even if they give you 72 hours, 48 hours or whatever, that's still 2 days, like kind of right up to the last minute before you're going to cancel out your hotel so you don't get charged for it. And do you then rebook for September 7th? Could, possible. Although September is very busy, and if you do want to do that, I would highly suggest that you do it quickly because it is among the busiest times of year. It's still considered September, very high season. Really, there's no low season in Italy anymore because it's so popular. It was at the top of the list in terms of summer travel destinations for Americans this year, again, especially Rome. But it's worth looking into. Now, the other option, and this ties into our discussion with Anthony DiStefano in totally offering it up, looking at the will of God and saying, God, you know, your will, not mine. Maybe you keep the plans that you have and just go with an open mind and an open heart. Maybe a little disappointed that you're not going to be there for the canonization as you had hoped. But you never know what God has in store for you. And also, it would be a little bit less frustrating not having to change all of your plans. So you have two options. I would say pray about it. Talk to your family about it. Think what's best for you. But, you know, sometimes God is just so good at surprising us. And we were talking about this yesterday on the Sunrise Morning Show with Matt Swaim, and I mentioned it and this morning on Annunciation Radio on my segment with Dave Vacherez and his program, that we let go and we let God say, you know what, I'm just going to go with the plans we had, Lord, and I'm going to trust you're going to make this the best pilgrimage ever. So that's my take or my two cents on what you should do had you been planning on going to either the canonization of Carlo Acutis back in April and couldn't make it, or had plans for the pre-scheduled, the previous date of August 3rd for Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. Now, more on these two amazing blesseds when we discuss with Kelly Solomon coming up in about 10 minutes or so. All right, it's very interesting if you look at the way the media are covering this story from the Pew Research Center. So this is a story that came out today based on a recent report from Pew. Here's a headline from USA Today. Many U.S. Catholics don't truly or fully practice their faith. Could Pope Leo's papacy change that? I don't have a problem so much with the question. It just makes it sound so negative. 1 in 5 Americans, the article says, identify as Catholic, but a majority are relatively not observant, a new Pew Researcher report says. Though they might pray daily, attend church weekly, or go to confession at least once a year, rarely do they do all three. The findings, the article says, especially for white Catholics, all reflect trends that have been developing for decades. One expert they spoke with says, in general, it seems that certain external observances of the faith, such as confession and even increasingly Mass, are less central to many Catholics than they were in earlier generations. The center's findings, released yesterday, June 16th, are based mostly on a survey of nearly 9,600 Catholics in America, Catholic adults, taken February 3rd through 9th before the passing and the hospitalization of Pope Francis, and well ahead of last month's election of Pope Leo XIV as a successor of Francis. About 20% of Americans still identify as Catholic. That's down from 24% in 2007, reflecting an overall decline in Christianity throughout the U.S. that has leveled off in recent years. In some places, the faith has found new footholds among young adults. Essentially, participation has been declining for a long time and has been much more steeply declining in the last 10 years or so. This is according to Melissa Wild, a sociologist at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia who studies religious change. There were previously understandings that people disaffiliated in young adulthood but would come back to the church when they were married and raising their children. That's much like less likely to occur now, she says. Much of that, she has to do with politics, research showing young people tend to be more liberal and representative of those disassociating with religion in general. That's not the case everywhere, however, the article says. At St. Charles Catholic Church in Arlington, Virginia, the Reverend Donald Planty says attendance is higher than before COVID, much of it driven by young adults in their 20s and 30s who form two-thirds of the 4,000-member congregation and are highly participatory. So I guess it's somewhat balanced in the article, but there is some good news and some good points that Pew brings out. They mention the number in that article, 20% of U.S. adults are Catholic. 9% of U.S. adults are cultural Catholics, identifying with Catholicism, but they say yes when asked whether, aside from religion, they consider themselves Catholic in any way. 9% are former Catholics. 9% are connected to Catholicism in other ways. They are not Catholic, culturally Catholic, or formerly Catholic, but they have a Catholic parent, a Catholic spouse or partner, or they say yes when asked if they ever attend Catholic Mass. Among those adults who identify as Catholic, some, however, are deeply observant. And I think these are super positive trends. 50% say they pray daily. Almost 30% attend Mass at least weekly. 23% go to confession with the Catholic priest at least once a year. Altogether, 13% of American Catholics say they do all three of these things. On the other hand, Pew says, many Catholics are relatively non-observant. 22% say they seldom or never pray. 40% seldom or never attend Mass. 47% never go to confession with a Catholic priest. In total, 13% of U.S. Catholics by religion seldom or never pray and seldom or never attend Mass and never go to confession. So I think these numbers are very telling. I think there's a mixture of some positives and negatives here. At the end of the day, though, I think this is a great opportunity, just like with the interest that was paid and attention paid to him with good reason because he was, you know, the Pope, the 266th Pope, Pope Francis, his illness, his passing, the conclave, the election of Pope Leo XIV, Carlo Acutis, Blessed Pierre Giorgio Frassati. For such a time as this, brothers and sisters, it is a great time to pick up on some of the positive points of the people who are practicing their faith. And as the Pope has said, build on that and make sure we are keeping Christ at the center. And we'll continue this discussion with Kelly Solomon up next. Seven minutes past the hour. Hope your Tuesday is going beautifully. June 17, 2025. Great to be with you and always great to catch up with Kelly Solomon and our Newman Guide News on a Tuesday from the Carlo Newman Society. It's pretty exciting, Kelly. On Friday, the consistory with the Pope, they announced that both Blessed Pierre Giorgio Frassati and Blessed Carlo Acutis will be canonized together on September 7th, which is practically right around the corner, about just over 2.5 months away. Exciting news. What do you think overall this canonization, what kind of impact do you think this will have on young people, especially those in high school and college? And thanks for joining us as always.
Good morning, Teresa. Great to be with you. This is such exciting news. We are thrilled that two new saints will be canonized, and they're great examples for young people, great role models, that truly this is what Catholic education is all about, is about forming the next generation of saints, and how neat that we have these examples of Blessed Carlo and Pier Giorgio Frassati to look to guide young people in their own journey to sainthood.
It's interesting, isn't it, that they're from two different centuries. So you had Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati from obviously the 20th century, and now Carlo, who's the first, he'll be the first millennial saint, even though they're about 100 years apart. Well, maybe a little less than that, because Pier Giorgio Frassati was in the 1920s. But, well, yeah, no, it's about 100 years. Well, he was actually born, and I'm trying to think of the dates. I'm not very good at math. But if you think about that time span, but yet they have so much in common in terms of the way they live their lives.
Yes, they do. They seem to have such a great, obviously, love for the Lord, but youthful enthusiasm and joy for life. And they were involved in activities that young people are involved in today, right? From hiking with Pier Giorgio Frassati and outdoor activities to video games, even with Carlo Acutis, that young people, I think, can relate well to these men and can learn a lot from them and be inspired to strive for sainthood in their everyday lives.
So who's your favorite among the two? I'm being that you're a little bit younger, a lot younger than me, and I'm thinking because it's more recent, you probably have more of an affinity toward Carlo?
Yes, you're right. Carlo was born a year after me, Teresa. So it's pretty amazing to think that we could have a saint that, you know, is in this, in my same age group, and so exciting. I really love his devotion to the Eucharist, the work that he did to put together the Eucharistic Miracles of the World exhibit. I was looking at it again last night, and what a beautiful project. It's something the Cardinal Newman Society has been involved with for a long time, because we actually distributed the Eucharistic Miracles of the World exhibit for many years, and different organizations have been distributing it since. And what a wonderful way for young people to learn about the truth of the Eucharist by learning about these amazing miracles that have happened all over the world with the Eucharist. And I think that it's so easy for young people to see this was a normal little boy who limited his amount of time he was playing video games and emphasized going to daily mass and praying the rosary and bringing about this great devotion to the Eucharist.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too. When you go to his tomb in St. Mary Major in Assisi, I don't know if you've been there, but a lot of people will go and say a prayer, and it's really quite moving. And they have a giant cutout of him with a monstrance, and him standing with the monstrance with a backpack and pointing to Jesus in the Eucharist. And then also above the tomb, there are all these different etchings in the wall of different images of him. And my favorite as a media person is one of him sitting in front of a computer, and Jesus is behind him kind of looking over his shoulder, kind of encouraging him, you know, to do the right thing. It's just, it's incredibly
beautiful,
incredibly moving.
Wow. I love that. That is so exciting. And I think it ties well with, you know, the bishop's Eucharistic revival that's just ending this month officially, right? It's been going on from 2022 to 2025. And the Cardinal Newman Society partnered with promoting this Eucharistic revival by creating a task force for Eucharistic education. And I think it fits right in line with what Carlo Acutis, what his message is, you know, bringing about this revival and love for the Eucharist. And we did this by emphasizing four aspects: Eucharistic literacy, Eucharistic liturgy, Eucharistic devotion, and Eucharistic living among young people.
Wow. So are there ways to apply each of those efforts?
Yes, exactly. So what we did is we asked Catholic schools and colleges across the country to submit their projects and join in this effort, this task force to renew Eucharistic education. And their projects could fall within any of those four themes, right? So, for example, Holy Child Catholic School in New Mexico, they submitted a project where they were reviving the use of Eucharistic hymns. And they were teaching students in both Latin and their music classes songs like Tantum Ergo, No Salutaris Hostia, to revive that Eucharistic liturgy that was in that category bucket. Another example is Benedictine College in Atchison, Kansas. They shared the Eucharistic Miracles of the World exhibit with their students, and what they did is they put out a couple Eucharistic miracles each week for a series of weeks to educate students about the Eucharist. And that fell into the Eucharistic literacy bucket, to learn the facts and the truth behind the Eucharist. So many great examples. Christendom College just released, I want to say just this last week, a new course on becoming a saint, wisdom from Aquinas to grow in virtue, and again, promoting Eucharistic literacy and living among young people.
That is so cool. Wow. That's amazing.
Yes.
Why do you think the Eucharist and has not connected with some people, with a lot of people? And there's that new Pew report that came out yesterday that we can talk about after the break. But to me, it's just so amazing that we don't understand, you know, what we have in the Eucharist. Jesus, it's him there. I mean, and we have so many Eucharistic miracles that are there, but there seems still, you know, Kelly, to be that disconnect.
Yes, and I think that's where faithful Catholic education can come into play, you know, that you're providing students with the education and the devotional aspects of the Eucharist, that they're learning the truth about the Eucharist in their history and their science and their art, music, Latin literature courses. And then you also have reverent liturgy
opportunities for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, Eucharistic processions, right, that faithful Catholic schools and colleges can help us turn around this lack of belief in the Eucharist among young people. And it's a wholly immersive environment, right, that this is not a one-time thing, that this is a lifelong formation, and I think that's what young people need. I know so many times in these studies that come out, they show that young people don't even know the truth about the Eucharist, or they actually believe that the church teaches this is a symbol. And so there is a crisis in dissent, but there is a crisis in the education about the Eucharist today.
Yeah, and that's why I think these two young saints can have such an impact, because they both had such a love for the Eucharist. I know that Carlo did so much using his talents with the internet and computer skills that he had to really pull the miracles together, as you said, and to help people understand what they have. But I also think, looking back at the time of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, in his own way, he also promoted the Eucharist, and his parents didn't even know how much time he was spending at church, how much time he was spending in prayer and at adoration. And there's even a beautiful story. I don't know if you heard this story, but I'll share it with you when we come back. It's really, really special. Gave me chills about how he trained his horse when the horse walked by, when he was taking his horse by a church in the city.
Oh.
More on both saints and also what we can do to help young people embrace the Eucharist, the body, blood, soul, and divinity, a special gift in the Catholic faith. We'll be right back. Welcome back, having a very important and encouraging conversation with our regular guest, Kelly Solomon. Newman Guide News. Kelly, of course, is with the amazing Cardinal Newman Society. Okay, Kelly, I got to tell you the story about Blessed Pier Giorgio and his horse. But first, listen to this quote from Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, and then think about, as we were just talking in our last segment, about the amazing dedication to Carlo in the Eucharist, as you beautifully explained. So this is Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. I urge you with all the strength of my soul to approach the Eucharistic table as often as possible. Feed on his bread of angels, from which you will draw the strength to fight inner struggles. Isn't that amazing?
Beautiful.
Isn't that just chilling? I mean, it's just so beautiful. All right, so the story about the horse. Are you ready for this? This is a true story. I did the research. And I've been to his tomb in Italy. I talked to people, so that he came from a very wealthy family. So he had a lot of things, although he gave a lot of things away, which eventually led to him catching a disease and dying because he was giving away his clothes. Anyway, you know the story. Apparently, he owned a horse, or his family owned a horse, and he trained the horse that if the horse was walking with him, or he was like having the horse on the reins, and the horse was trained that when they came by a church and he stopped, that the horse would somehow, not obviously it's a horse so they can't genuflect, but bow with his head in reverence toward the church because of the location of the Blessed Sacrament being there.
Wow. Good for him. That is so awesome. I love that.
Isn't that amazing?
I love that. You know, it makes me think about, I loved his quote too, of getting to Mass and the Eucharist as much as possible. And it made me think about, what are we doing for our young people to get them to Mass and to the Eucharist as much as possible? And surely our Catholic schools can lead the way by offering frequent opportunities for the sacraments. I know with the Newman Guide, we're looking for Catholic schools to be offering Mass at least once a week to students. But many of them are reviving daily Mass for students. They're offering frequent adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, Eucharistic processions, and teaching students about how to genuflect, right? What prayers can you learn from the saints when you're in Eucharistic adoration that can help you build up your own prayer and spiritual life? That's what the best Catholic schools are doing.
What do you think happened along the way? I mean, I know you sent me a list of some appalling things that are happening at some other places around the country, and we were talking during the break that even the secular media, which usually support, you know, all kinds of crazy things, are stunned at what's happening at some of these places. Why do you think this is occurring? What happened over the years, do you think, Kelly?
Yes, so much secularization, so much pull to be like our secular counterparts, and we have to reclaim what Catholic education is all about. Teresa, I'm actually going to a conference beginning tomorrow called the Adeodatus Conference. It's being hosted at Belmont Abbey College in North Carolina. It's one of our Newman Guide recommended colleges.
and they're hosting an Adeodatus conference on renewing Catholic education and bringing together great leaders in Catholic education. The Cardinal Newman Society's president, Patrick Riley, will be there giving a session actually on the Eucharist at the heart of Catholic education. So,
wow.
So I'll have to share some takeaways from his presentation. But it's exciting to see these key Catholic education leaders coming together and revitalizing what education is all about, because I see it as a key way that we're going to be forming the next generation of where are we going to be forming the next generation of saints? How is the church evangelizing? This Catholic education is a key means of doing so.
Yeah. How do you think having two new young saints, Blessed Pierre Giorgio Frassati was in his early 20s, and of course Carlo Acutis was a teen. He was 15 when he passed away from leukemia. How do you think having two did so much in such a short period of time? What impact do you think that will have on young people, especially kids in college, Kelly?
I think it's going to have a great impact, that there are people that they can relate to even more than some others who lived maybe a long time ago, that we are all called to sainthood. Hopefully it will revitalize the mission of Catholic schools and colleges, that this is about forming saints. This is the whole mission of Catholic education. And now we can look to Carlo Acutis and Frassati, who are so likable and, you know, were devoted to Mass and the Eucharist and the Rosary while they still went hiking and played video games. And that can be a great inspiration for young people. I know that that myself and my children are certainly inspired by them, and we are so looking forward to the canonization.
In terms of, do you think that more schools, and no, it's early now since we just found out on Friday that both will be canonized the same day, but do you see colleges and high schools somehow incorporating more, let's say, classes on the saints, especially these two young saints? Do you think that will happen?
I do. And I think that they'll take some of the themes, like this Eucharistic revival that's been going on, and they'll carry it on. You know, the bishop's renewal might officially end this month, but we want that Eucharistic revival to continue on forever in Catholic schools and colleges. And so I think things like the University of Mary that spent 2 years recording music focused on the Eucharist, I think those things will have a lasting impact and they'll build on continued projects. Another example is the University of Dallas hosted a whole Adoro Te lecture series on the Eucharist, looking at the Eucharist from historical, literary, philosophical, scriptural lens, right, from all views. And I think events like that will continue because of the inspiration of Carlo Acutis and Frassati, who loved the Eucharist and wanted Catholics everywhere to grow in their devotion and love of the Eucharist.
How do you think this could impact families? Because in the case of Carlo and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, both families, their parents, were not very faithful. And Carlo's parents and his mom, who's just amazing, and going around talking about her son, and she says that actually Carlo saved her soul because she was not that involved in the church at all. I mean, she had the sacraments, and then the only time she found herself in church before she raised Carlo was at various family events, you know, a communion or a baptism or, you know, a wedding or whatnot, and so she would go to church then. But he was the one that got her to go to church because he always wanted to spend more time in church. And the same thing happened, and not until after, of course, after he died, but in terms of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, his parents had no idea how involved he was in terms of the kind of efforts he was making with the poor and how he was bringing so many friends to the faith. I mean, that does have an impact on a family, doesn't it?
That is really incredible. And I think that speaks to, you know, what other influences and what type of environment is your young person in? Because even though parents are the primary educators of their children, you know, what other influences are they going to have that's going to set them up on their path? You know, I've seen in my own life that my husband was sent to a really great Catholic school that's now recommended in the Newman Guide. And it was through that experience that he converted to Catholicism. And so it's something really important.
Oh, so he wasn't Catholic.
About. Yes, my husband was not Catholic. He was Catholic when I met him the first week of freshman year of college, but he became Catholic his senior year of high school due to the influence of a really amazing Catholic high school, mostly the teachers and the coaches who said, hey, you know, you're striving for excellence in academics, in your sports. How about you strive for excellence in your faith life as well? And they made that tremendous impact on him. And again, it's had impacts on both sides of our families. Grateful for the faith he's able to share with our family now today. But that's, you know, young people are making decisions about their faith and what they're doing with their lives. And so putting them in a really wholesome Catholic environment is so critical in those formative years.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with Kelly Solomon, of course, for our Newman Guide News update every week. She checks in with us. All right, time for some more quotes, and I'll get some quotes from Carlo, too, because he's got some amazing quotes as well. This is on the Eucharist with Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, who's going to be canonized along with Carlo Acutis now on September 7th. When you are totally consumed by the Eucharistic fire, then you will be able more consciously to thank God who has called you to become part of his family. Then you will enjoy the peace that those who are happy in this world have never experienced, because true happiness, O young people, does not consist in the pleasures of this world or in earthly things, but in peace of conscience, which we only have if we are of pure heart and mind. Okay, so he's saying here, wow. O young people, I wonder to whom he was speaking when he made this quote, because this is something that just, you know, reverberates through the ages, if you think about it, right?
It does. We're drawn to those pleasures of the world, and he's calling us back to the bigger goals.
All right, here's another one. Come and your every sacrifice will be repaid in heaven, because Jesus Christ promises that everything we do for the poor in his name we do for him. You do not want to deny Christ this love. He whose infinite love for the humanity gave himself to us in the sacrament of the Eucharist as our comforter and the bread of life. And then how about this one? Jesus is with me. I have nothing to fear. This is such good stuff. I could go on
if
forever.
If only I could remember that
guys
every
are
moment of
I mean,
every
I
day.
Just, this, exactly, right? We're talking with Kelly Solomon from the Cardinal Newman Society about the influence of Carlo Acutis and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. Okay, so how can a high school or a college, how can they get more involved now in this big event that's coming up in terms of, because obviously both of them were so dedicated to the Eucharist, which is really cool if you think about it, Kelly, because, you know, two saints could be, lots of saints are canonized together. 3, 4, 5 people get canonized, I mean, even more at the same time. But these two young men from similar circumstances, wealthy families, had an impact not only on young people in their own area, but their families, because their families weren't faithful, even though they were, quote unquote, Catholic in name only. It's so unique that they were both so dedicated to the Eucharist. How can schools and young people really be an example of Carlo and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, do you think?
Yes. I think that they can, you know, learn more about the Eucharist and become more devoted to the Eucharist. I'd encourage them to check out our entire Eucharistic education website, where we've been collecting projects and ideas from Catholic schools and colleges over the last 3 years to highlight some of the very best examples. And these are easy things to implement. You know, sometimes it's just adding a section to your school library on books devoted to the Eucharist and telling students about them, and it captures their attention and they read them, right? Or adding more reverent music to your masses, or adding conferences on learning more deeply about the Eucharist. There are so many things that Catholic schools and colleges can do to educate students about the truth of the Eucharist, help them grow in devotion to the Eucharist, and learn what it means to live a Eucharistic lifestyle where Jesus is at the heart of everything you do.
Wow. Kelly, what a great conversation. Thank you for all the great discussions we've been having. So where do we get resources if people want to do more with Eucharistic education? Because your website has a phenomenal amount of information on that.
Yes, you can go to our main website, or you can go right to eucharisticeducation.org. and see all of the projects that we've highlighted from Catholic schools and colleges who love our Lord and the Eucharist and want young people to know the truth and to grow in devotion to Jesus their entire lives. I think it's a great way to prepare for the canonization of Carlo Acutis and Blessed Giorgio Frassati, who love the Eucharist themselves and
What a blessing, what a gift we can give young people by teaching them about the Eucharist and exposing them to Jesus and the Blessed Sacrament.
Amen. Well said. Kelly, thanks so much. Have a great week and a weekend. And I'll be taking a little bit of time off next week, so I will talk to you, God willing, when we get back for our live broadcast again at Catholic Connection. I believe you'll be with one of our guest hosts as well. Kelly Solomon, of course, with Newman Guide News that we bring every Tuesday from the Cardinal Newman Society. We'll be right back on a Tuesday, June 17th. Let you know what's coming up tomorrow. Carlo Acuda said, "The Eucharist is my highway to heaven." Amen to that. We'll be right back. I would encourage you to check out all the great resources on the Cardinal Newman Society's website, especially if you're working with young people or you want to work with your own young people in your life and circle of family and friends and then talk to them about the Eucharist and these amazing saints. I mean, think about that. You know, God's timing is always perfect. So you have Carlo Acutis and Blessed Carlo Acutis and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati being ordained on the being canonized on the same day, September 7, 2025, just months away. And they're both two saints of the Eucharist. And you think about everything with the Eucharist in the United States that's concluding, as Kelly Solomon just told us, and you have the new Pope who was talking about being so centered on Christ. Coinkydinks? I think not. I don't believe in coincidence. I believe, as I said last hour, in God-cidences. And I really would encourage you to do some research, if you haven't done so already, on Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and Blessed Carlo Acutis. They had so much in common, especially their family backgrounds. And they're not that far away from each other in terms of where they were from, because Torino and Milano are only about an hour or so apart. Both really beautiful cities, and unfortunately, cities that a lot of people don't visit. Now, the city of Turin is most familiar to people because of the Shroud, because actually the Shroud is kept in the same church where Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati's tomb is. I know, because I've been there twice. Milan is also crazy beautiful. All right, tomorrow we are going to have a great discussion all about young people again and a new exhibit of JP2. Have a great Tuesday. Talk to you on a Wednesday.